Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 18 of Tracking Connections. This is Aiden, and I'm here with Sarah and John today.
Hey, everyone. Welcome. We are going to talk today about the core routine of sit spot.
Yep. And John here. Hope you're all enjoying a peaceful moment where you can drop in with us and go on a little journey into a very old practice that has been the cornerstone of deep nature connection practices for, I imagine, tens of thousands of people around the world at this point. One of our friends, Craig Foster, even took the practice underwater. And you might know the results of that. When he told me he was going to do that and asked me if I thought it would work, I said, yeah. You know, the result of that was not only did he discover new behaviors in common species that were never known before by science, and he recorded them, but he also discovered, I forgot how many new species of invertebrates underwater and fish, I believe, that no one had ever met before in inshore water, so near the beach, you know, in a place where it's unlikely that people would discover new things. Because of the sit spot practice combined with other core routines, you know, such as the honoring routine and how to move in a way that you don't disturb things. And I think you might also know that he put together a Netflix documentary which won an Academy Award called My Octopus Teacher as a result of this. And he literally went every day for 10 years into the same part of the kelp forest by his home and did this practice underwater. And he ended up writing a book called Amphibious Soul, Finding the Wild in a Tame World. And we did a podcast episode with Craig just a little while ago, so you could listen to that as well. But yeah, so let's think about this sit spot, or what Tom Brown, my mentor, calls sit area now. And it's interesting, you can tell who learned about it from the Tracker School versus learned about it from me, and Tom likes to point that out. Hey, I met a person who talked about their sit spot. It's funny how you can track me and you through their choice of words for this practice, right? In the earliest days when Tom introduced me to this routine, I was having none of it. I was 10 years old, and well, as a 10-year-old, that you could say I was a little bit maybe ADHD, or I'm not sure, you know, I was unlabeled back in the day, but, you know, I was basically too fidgety to sit still, and I did not understand why I should sit in the woods, you know, just kind of hang out in a place with no particular purpose. Like, I'm like, well, I can be really still if I have a fishing pole in my hand, because I love fishing. But there was no way I was going to do this, like, weird go sit in the woods thing. I didn't know why he wanted me to do it. But he did tell me, well, there's a really magical fishing spot I could take you to. But you have to learn to be still and quiet. I can tell you need practice. He called it practice camping, right? Because we were going to go camping, and I'd never really camped yet. And we would have to, you know, drive into this place in the Pine Barrens and camp and set up near this creek that had a great catfishing hole, which also had American eels, which Tom knew I really, really wanted to catch American eels. So he said, well, you know, if you go every day in the beginning, you know, for at least 20 minutes, and then it was 40 minutes, and then it was an hour, if you go every day, I will be able to tell when you're ready to go camping. Okay, so he didn't even like put a date on the calendar or tell me I have to go, you know, 30 days in a row. It was nothing like that. It was basically when he could tell that whatever shift in me he was looking for happened, that's when he would take me. So I think I went about, I'm going to say it was about every day for probably two to three months when he said, okay, let's plan this trip. You're ready. And I can tell you what happened in the beginning. In the beginning, I didn't want to be there. So I was more or less, you know, I had this watch with me, and I would, you know, kind of watch for that 20-minute mark, and then I would leave, right? And then, you know, I'd watch, you know, the next day I'd do the same thing. And essentially I wasn't even there, you know, I was kind of like in my head the whole time, and I was just waiting for 20 minutes to be done. But then he would listen to my stories at night. He'd ask me questions, and those questions would get me to go back the next day and have to look around or listen for something or, you know, pay attention to what was there. You know, what kind of trees are there, and, you know, where does the sun set from your sit spot and that sort of thing, right? And in the beginning, it was definitely something I didn't want to do, but I was doing it like a chore, right? But something happened after going there, 2-3 weeks, maybe it was, 20-21 days in a row or something. I started reaching this point where I actually liked going, and I started to look forward to it. You know, like I didn't need the task of, you know, him making me go to want to go. It became an intrinsic thing. It was like a relationship formed between me and my sit spot. And again, in those days, it didn't have the name sit spot. It was just a place next to a large ash tree that was on a little hill that overlooked this like sort of mixed forest open area that went down on three sides. So I could like see really well when I was facing west. And behind me, there was some brush, like a wall of brush, actually, that was an old fence that had long since rotted away. But, you know, the birds' droppings had grown into various bushes and vines and created this kind of wall behind me that if anything tried to move through it, I would hear it. And that's pretty much what I did every day for the next, I don't know, from 1971 till 79, basically. 78, when I went off to college, was the first time I didn't have the same sit spot, you know, that I had had every day for so many years prior. And I can tell you that from the sit area, I learned so many things. And I won't get into them right now, but I'll just say I would not have been capable, for instance, of writing the book, What the Robin Knows, How the Birds Reveal the Secrets of the Natural World, if it wasn't for the sit spot. I mean, that was core to my learning bird language. And, you know, the practice is an old practice. It was a rite of passage for grandfather when he was growing up, the elders in his tribe. And when I did some more research into some of these older hunter-gatherer scout culture tribes, like around the Apaches and others, this was a way for children to learn bird and animal language. And children were actually posted in these sit areas all around their camps, and they would have to sit for several hours and take turns watching over the landscape. And when they watched over the landscape and they saw bird language and animal language, when they were done with their sit, they would come back and talk to their elders about it, and the elders would ask them really cool questions, and the next day they'd go out and do it again. So it was a core routine for literally learning bird and animal language. But there's so much more that it can gift us, right? But again, the thing I want to emphasize is when I started out, this was not something I would have done. I wouldn't have done it by choice. And it wasn't until I went every day for, you know, 20, 25 days, whatever it was, I don't know, there was a shift in me where now I looked forward to it. It was something that I wanted to do. It didn't feel like a chore. Yeah, so that's me. And see, Aiden, you know, if you have reflections around your experience with the sit spot.
Yeah, you know, I think about, first of all, just being a child, that the idea of the sit spot was a very flexible idea. You know, I didn't have one spot that I went to until I was a teenager, but I had the entire property that we lived on. And the routine that was also there was that routine of coming back and somebody was going to catch my story, right? What happened while you were out there, and what did you notice? And, you know, those questions that came up. And, you know, I think about it now as an adult, because I don't have in my neighborhood a proper piece of woods. So my sit spot time becomes, you know, sitting outside in my backyard when I'm working, or sitting in my desk and being able to look out the front window, or walking my dog in the morning and the evening. But the pattern that repeats for me that I have come to find is automatic, and that I actually miss when I'm not doing it, is that pattern of noticing what is moving and changing on the landscape. You know, what are the birds up to today? How did the flowers grow? How did the plants change? How did the trees change? You know, noticing the apple tree and the pear tree in my front yard, and how that fruit is coming in, and remembering when the blossoms were there. You know, noticing the scrub jays and that come and visit my bird feeder, and actually learning them as individuals. You know, and noticing, oh, that one's Scruff, the scruffy one, and the other one is very pretty, and I named her Queen. You know, and now as I'm sitting here in this spot, and my, you know, my window has a view out into the yard, I can see one of the scrub jays actually sitting on top of a sweet gum tree across the street, and taking a look at the neighborhood. And at that same time, you know, I see the hawk soaring about a block away. You know, and so it becomes, for me in my adult life, it's actually a pattern. Like, the sit spot routine lives inside of me as much as it is linked to any individual place. Like, any time that I am in a new area, I find myself pausing and looking around and asking that question, oh, what are the birds doing today? What are the animals doing today here? You know, and what do I notice? And sort of putting that into a place on the map and asking that question and following my curiosity around it. And, you know, certainly I can also attest to that fidgety boy that you described, you know, and I remember when I was going every single day and trying to do 40 minutes to an hour every day, I remember the fidgetiness and, you know, and that challenge. And I'm super grateful for that element of it, that I challenged myself to find that place of sinking in and sitting still, and the things that come out of the other side of that, you know, of being able to kind of sink into that quiet mind. And, you know, and all of this routine and all this practice, you know, has sort of just taken root inside me now. And I find myself practicing it, you know, whether I'm thinking about it or not.
It's really interesting for me to hear you both. I grew up living in the woods, and I very naturally had sit spots as a child. It was like places in the land that had a particular feel, like a nook. Like one was a rock outcropping, an area with a rock outcropping that just had a sense of a place. A sense of kind of personality, something happening in that place. And I would go to those spots and not always sit, you know, it was often exploratory. But it was a place where I felt comfortable on the land. It was a place I felt called to on the land, and a place that I would visit regularly. And I had various places like that in different locations, because I moved a couple times as a child. All of those were, like I said, natural sit spot accumulation experiences, whereas like getting to know a forest or getting to know a seashore and finding the place where I fit there and where I feel comfortable. When I moved to a more suburban area where there was less forest, I found that need arise in me of, wait, I'm not just living in the woods. I have to actually go seek out a place. And this was when I was about 12 years old. It was a neighborhood, so it wasn't, you know, a cityscape, but still I felt really pulled to find a place close to my house in nature that I could go. And I ended up finding a spot near underneath some power lines, and it was certainly not the kind of deep woods or ocean front experience that I had had previously. And I felt that shift, right? Being in the deep woods in the sit spot had a certain very safe feeling for me. And I was looking for that feeling of safety
in being within a neighborhood, which was a new experience for me. And the best I could do was this spot by the power lines. And we only lived in that house for a couple of years. And over that time, I did my best to kind of make it more home-like. You know, there was a old board there, and I made that my anchor point where I would use it to sit on instead of kind of being annoyed by it being a human, human-made object. But I didn't really have enough time to sink into that place the way that I did as a child. And then I got out of the sit-spot routine for the most part, though every place that I lived throughout my adolescence and into college years, I had some place in nature that I would seek refuge, that I would go to, you know, if it was by a tree or even around the backside of the house that was kind of private, where I could just be in my senses and be aware of nature. It became a rhythm throughout my whole life to seek out those places where I could sink in and find quiet and be with nature. But it wasn't until 2014 when I started the naturalist training program where the sit spot is emphasized as a core routine that I picked it back up as a focused practice. And at that time, I was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, also in a neighborhood. And the sit spot that was near my house was just on the other side of the fence that lined the property where I lived. And it was on the edge of an arroyo where a lot of homeless people would walk through, and just a lot of people with their dogs would walk through. So it had a less than ideal feeling. And, you know, I was kind of feeding off the memories of my childhood and having these pristine, amazing sit spots that just really nourished me. And gave me that sense of refuge. It was quite a stark contrast for me to be, you know, kind of on the edge of town and with a fairly, you know, moderate human traffic going right through my sit spot. But I stayed with that sit spot for 4 years, and in that time visiting it consistently, I took on very naturally a caretaking role with that place. And I took out all the dead branches. I used those dead branches to build privacy walls for myself. And I practiced that silence sense meditation and other like scout invisibility practices so that I would be able to sit in my sit spot and have people walk by without noticing me. So it actually became, you know, a practice to have a sit spot that was not completely private. And other than that, the shift in my sit spot, the actual vegetation shifted because I took out the invasive saplings that were coming in and allowed, you know, I nurtured like the native plants. There was a morning glory growing there. So I put up some of the dead branches to create a natural trellis. So over those years, I ended up walking into that place, and it felt like a park. It felt like a manicured, you know, park, even though I wasn't tending it, you know, or adding extra plants or anything like that. It just had that feel of being really well cared for. And so I look at that experience and that the contrast of being a child where the land was healthy at that time and it was healing me and holding a space for me, and this other experience of being in a place that hadn't been tended for many, many, many years and actually, you know, verged on being abused. It didn't hold a feeling of, I go here and I relax. I actually had to create that, and I was actually able to create that in that place. So
there was a lot of similarities in my experiences to what you, Aiden, and Sarah described. And, you know, this idea, this dropping in that Sarah talked about, you know, what does that actually mean? And, you know, how does the sit spot contribute to that? I think what happens again, in the beginning, and I don't blame people for not wanting to have a sit spot. It's like, oh, let's do everything, but I don't want to have to do that sit spot thing, okay? Right? So I know people have resistance to it, but I think, you know, if you could actually do it every day for, you know, let's say 30 minutes, because I think 20 minutes is about what it takes for the land to settle back down from your arrival, you know, until you begin to, and you do learn this, by the way, from your sit spot. You'll reach this place where you'll start to pay attention all the way from when you leave the door of your house until you arrive at your sit spot. Whereas, you know, when I first started out, I'd kind of walk to my sit spot thinking about stuff the whole time. I'd get to my sit spot, I'd sit there for a couple minutes, I'd kind of realize, oh, I'm here, you know, and then I'd kind of relax, and then I'd start paying attention, right? So there's this interesting progression in my memory of, I think I'm going to pay attention before I get to my sit spot. And I there was this cul-de-sac, you know, so there was a tarmac road that we lived along, and this little cul-de-sac popped out from our street at a 90-degree angle across the street from our house. So I would walk out the front door, I'd go down the steps, walk across the lawn in a straight line trajectory for that cul-de-sac, you know, that little nub of a road. There was only two houses on that little road, so it wasn't very long. But I'd get on that little paved cul-de-sac road, and I'd get to the cul-de-sac, and it would be when I got to the end of the cul-de-sac and I was about to step into the woods, that's when I would start paying attention. And then I started to realize, well, wait, I should probably start paying attention, you know, sooner. And eventually it got to the point where I would start paying attention even before I walked out the front door of the house. I would literally prepare myself, you know, like almost like a ritual, like, okay, I'm about to open the door. Whew, take a breath, just drop in, you know, turn on my wide angle vision right now, start to become aware of the need to be aware, you know, like, so that grew on me over time. And once I had trained myself to be aware, you know, even before I opened the front door to walk out towards my sit spot, that's when I started to notice things like, if I open the door too fast, the gray squirrel runs away from the mulberry tree, the birds fly off, right? And I've already sent out a concentric ring. I've already told the birds and animals at my sit spot that I'm moving in that direction. And so I got to that point where I started to look for this feedback. And just like Craig describes in Amphibious Soul, his new book, he describes that he learned to move from the undersea creatures. They taught him to move. And part of what that means, is that recognizing that depending on what kind of mind state I was in, like, am I stressed? Am I anxious? Am I got a lot of thoughts in my head? Or can I let go and be present and go into wide angle vision and move in that way we call fox walking, which is kind of a gliding pattern, you know, and so you're coupling your peripheral vision or wide angle vision, or what we call, when we're teaching this to children, owl eyes, you know, you're putting those two things together. So you're walking with your wide angle vision open, so you're paying attention to the whole field of vision. And you're moving in a gliding motion the way a fox does, fox walking, you know. There's a little more to it. But because you're in that posture of awareness, you become much more present. You know, your thoughts kind of go away, and your mind becomes like a still pond. It's a form of moving meditation, or dynamic meditation, as Tom Brown likes to call it. And so as you move in this way, you're able to see in your peripheral vision, you know, the sudden movement, the jerky movement of a bird that's suddenly concerned about you approaching. And then all you have to do is just pause. You know, you just kind of slow down and stop, and then don't look directly at the bird, but watch it out of the corner of your eye until it settles back down again. And Grandfather Stalking Wolf used to call this, taking the pressure off your concentric ring, letting the wave that's moving ahead of you settle before you move again. So you start to become aware of this almost invisible field of energy that's pushing out ahead of you, and you're watching how it affects the things around you. And then you learn to adjust the way you're moving. So the animals and the birds are literally teaching you how to move. And when you get into that kind of communication, you go into a much deeper state of awareness and calm on the inside. The sense of peace starts to emerge within you. And then when you arrive at your sit area, you've been paying attention the whole way. Now maybe when you get to your sit area, the chipmunk isn't running away from you anymore. And, you know, when I first went to my sit area, I didn't even know there was a chipmunk that hung out there. Like, I didn't even know there was one. And then when I slowed myself down and learned to move from the animals, I would see that chipmunk in the distance run down his hole and make a noise. And then over time, he didn't run away. And then I would arrive at my sit spot, and sometimes he'd be sitting there eating, you know, and he wouldn't leave anymore. And he just became comfortable with my presence. And this state of dropping in is emerging from that. And that state of dropping in is like going into this deep sense of personal peace. And this is where the sit spot really starts to, that's when it really gets good. And then this is where it starts to make sense, because you start to notice things you never saw before. You start to see patterns of behavior in animals you've never seen before. You start to link things together. You start to have these moments where you're like, whoa, where did that tree come from? I've been sitting here for like 30 days, every day for an hour, and I never noticed that great big giant tree that's right there. You know, it's like, whoa, you know, all these kind of weird things start happening, because you know someone didn't come in the middle of the night and plant a 200-year-old tree, but you're amazed that your own mind filtered it out. Like, how could that happen? And you start to ask questions like, wow, what is that telling me about myself? You know, and what else am I missing? And what else is here right now that I maybe haven't noticed before? And you start to get more curious, and you find yourself disappearing into watching a tiny little beetle walk along a piece of bark for like 10 minutes. Like, time stops. You don't even know what time it is. You're now moving and slowing down to earth time, as Tom calls it, right? A whole nother rhythm starts to emerge within you. And then that sensitivity, that awareness of your energy going out and how others are receiving your energy, and, you know, your own personal adjustments to that actually cause the way that you move in the world to shift. You become more sensitive to other people. They start to feel your ability to listen deeply in silence, and they start to confide in you in ways that you would never expected, because they can just feel instinctively that you're a really good listener and a safe place to tell stories to, right? So there's all these things that, you know, people say, well, can I get these lessons from something other than the sit spot? You know, I think there's things that you can only get from the sit spot. I think there's things you'll only get from the sit spot. When people tell me, oh, I have 100 sit spots, then I know they don't know the gift that is waiting for them. Because if you have 100, you don't develop these deep relationships with one place, with all the beings, with all the trees. You know, you get to know how the tree changes through the different times of day, how the light shifts, you know, the different scents that are there in the morning versus the afternoon, the different feeling in the air of different times of day. You sense weather patterns shifting and changing. You can feel rain coming before it arrives. Like, there's all these things that the sit spot can give you that moving around a lot cannot. And yeah, there's so many things that just, like, I kind of think of the sit spot as almost like a system that you can plug things into, right? You can plug all these other core routines into your sit spot routine and enhance it and make it much more interesting. And I'll pause here with just this one last comment, which is that I would go to my sit spot in the beginning, the shortest distance between two points every time, and I began to wear a trail into my sit spot. And one day Tom and I were walking in the forest, and we were passing where I, you know, my little trail to my sit spot, and he saw that trail and he said, hey, does that lead to your sit area? And I'm like, yeah. He said, you don't want to trail to your sit area, John. You know, what I'd like you to do is, you know, let's put some, you know, some dead branches here and just fluff up the leaves and don't go that way again. What I'd like to challenge you to do now is to go to your sit area a different way every time and go towards it, but let your body radar, you know, let your sense of feeling pulled guide you the way you're going to go today, you know, and then when you've come in from every angle you could possibly come in from, then start going in one day as a raccoon and imagine yourself a raccoon going into your sit spot. Another day go in as a deer, right? And it just made the things like a never-ending adventure. There were so many lessons that I learned from that experience over those, you know, 7 years before I went away to college. And, you know, that sit spot in 1979 actually got bulldozed and turned into a development. That whole huge 3,000-acre tract of woods that was around my sit area is now a neighborhood. So it is forever, you know, gone from the way it was. But as Aiden described earlier, that sit spot is also in me. Like, I actually have access to all those places as if they're still there. The memories are so clear. It's like a world within me. And I feel like I was that place and that place was me.
Thank you for that share. That was beautiful. You know, I'm thinking right now and listening from the perspective of someone who maybe feels very, very far from having access to that experience right now, whether because it's way outside of their comfort zone or they, you know, maybe you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm just way too busy. There's no way I could find that kind of time. And, you know, the first thing I want to reflect is that this process that John so beautifully describes here, that could be a process of unfolding that is literally years in the making, and that there's no timeline on it. There's no rush, and it will happen, you know, on Earth time, which you can't decide that time. And the thing that I have found as I'm trying to introduce this to my children is that there's always this balance between what you're naturally feeling curious about, what you're naturally drawn to, what feels really easy for you, and then that awareness that there's an edge, and that edge is a little uncomfortable. And on the other side of that edge, you know, maybe it's the dark, maybe it's going in the rain, maybe it's 30 minutes instead of 20 minutes or an hour instead of 30 minutes. You know, there's these edges that we feel. And I think we all naturally have times when we're sort of up for pushing our edge. And we have other times where we're like, actually, what I need right now is something gentle. I need something easy. I need something fun or curious or playful. You know, and the beauty of it is that nature has a way of being able to meet us where we are. And it can unfold in whatever way you naturally feel that day. You know, and so it's something to look at in this process of, can I sort of slowly unfold my awareness and slowly expand my comfort zone over time? And, you know, it would be such a gift if all of us had an hour or even 2 hours every single day where we could go to a beautiful spot that is undisturbed and we could have this space and time. But often the reality is that maybe we get that opportunity, you know, much less often than that. Maybe you only get to have it once a week or even once a month. And what I would say to that is take it when you have it. And then when you have 5 minutes on your back porch or you're walking from one place to the next and you have the opportunity to use your wide angle vision or listen around or just ask the question, what is the nature around me in this moment? Take that opportunity as well, because there is no doubt that putting ourselves into these environments where we really are able to sink in is really, really beneficial. And that we have this other part of our awareness, which is essentially like a radio dial, which is what you're choosing to tune into, what you seek out in your awareness will become more obvious to you. And what I have found is, you know, especially in those times of my life where I have less access to nature, really practicing tuning into the nature that I do have access to has sort of created in me this automatic tuning in to the beauty and the nature and the things that I'm curious about or I'm excited about around me. And I have also seen that with my kids. You know, when I say, hey, we're going to go do sit spot for 20 minutes, you know, a lot of the time, you know, they're 11 and 12 and they're rolling their eyes at me. But if we go for a walk in our same place that we visit and they're getting really into that walk, I actually had one of them say last week, let's do a sit spot now. You know, and so it can emerge naturally over time, and you know, we can't force that time, but it their deepening is happening as a process of me allowing them to be where they are. And if you know, this week where they are is that they just want to catch fence lizards, well, that's awesome. Let's catch fence lizards, because then when I say let's go out to nature next week, they're going to think about those fence lizards and they're going to want to turn around and jump in the car and go to our, you know, our favorite spot. So, you know, I think we are like that ourselves as well. We have to be sort of delicate with our own relationship and sort of mentor ourselves in that way of understanding how much of an edge I have and how often I'm willing to push that edge, whereas sometimes maybe I just need to catch fence lizards. And I'll leave it there for now.
Yeah, I love that. Aiden, thank you. The allowance of time and the gentle reminder of, you know, consistency and not forcing ourselves to go and stay for a half an hour. You know, if I had that in my head, I have to do a half an hour at my sit spot every day, it would feel way too intense. So I think the way that I started back into the rhythm of it as an adult was just saying, you know, I'll just go there for however long it is, you know, if it's 2 minutes, if it's 5 minutes. And like John was describing it, it became a very organic unfolding of a true desire, right, to be there. And I think as we get older and we do have more responsibilities, there's always that voice that's like, oh, I should be doing something else. It's like trying to pull you out of your sit spot. But that voice kind of slowly silences and turns into the voice that says, I need to go to my sit spot today. Yeah, and also the unfolding of relationship over time that John was talking about, building those relationships in your sit spot is, for me, probably the essence of sit spot. You know, it was like building relationship to the trees and the plants there, you know, the way that the water would move through the arroyo, the people moving through. And then over time, like the awareness of the animals, right? I've started seeing raccoon tracks coming from the culvert on the far side of the arroyo and then coming up right through my sit spot and going into the neighbor's yard for their compost. I started seeing this pattern where there was a regular trail that the raccoons used. And I don't know if they started using it, you know, after some time, or if I just became aware of it at some point. But then it developed into, you know, I would get worried if the raccoons weren't showing up, if their tracks weren't showing up. And I'd go to the neighbor's compost and I'd follow the trail, you know, where did they go from here? I got really super curious about this raccoon family. And it's like such a blessing to have regular animals in an urban area, right? Again, this was right in a neighborhood. You know, I did have the corridor of the arroyo on my side that the animals like to use, but there's a lot of animals that live in urban areas, right? And for me, it was like such a connective experience to be on the trail of one of those animals and get to know them over time. And over years, like I really appreciate the emphasis of the years of gentle return, you know, just consistency, and that realizing this is so good for me. I am nourishing from this experience and learning and creating relationships. I finally started going to my sit spot after sunset. I would go for sunset with this awareness really of the raccoons and knowing that they were waking up, probably, you know, getting up right after sunset to go to the compost. So I started getting brave enough to stay in through the dark. And finally got to meet that raccoon family. They walked right beside me on the trail that went through my sit spot. I could have reached out and touched them. They were so close.
the close encounters that we have at our sit spot. Yeah, there's so many wonderful experiences. As we're recording, I'm sitting out near my sit spot, not exactly at it, but I'm right near it, and there's been a wild turkey that has come about 5 feet away from me, was drinking water, and then hung out for about 5 minutes while I was sharing stories, but just doing its own thing, not even minding that I'm here talking. And now there's a gray squirrel, like 3 feet from the end of my toes right now, just minding his own business. And there's been house and purple finches coming and going, and chickadees and scrub jays and Steller's jays and bandtail pigeons and tree swallows coming and going from their nest. And, you know, all this is unfolding, and I'm watching it in real time, hearing it in real time, feeling the breeze. You know, I'm in the shade right now and just appreciating the coolness in the shade, watching the clouds in the sky and the smoke haze from a distant wildfire. And all of this is happening real time, and I'm aware of how many things I'm just tracking on the unconscious level. You know, all these things that I'm tracking on the unconscious level, they're in so many dimensions, right? There's like what's going on up in the trees. There's the movement of the wind. There's all these birds coming and going. You know, there's the deer walking by. There's the squirrel over here. You know, that every single one of these life forms and environmental conditions, elements, they're all telling stories to me right now. And as Aidan said, you know, whatever we become curious about, whatever we attend to with our awareness, that's what we see, that's what we notice. And so, you know, I can be in this field with all these things going on right around me and be totally in these stories with you, Aidan, and you, Sarah, and not necessarily engage with any of the things that are going on around me, but there's like this unconscious mind or preconscious mind that is recording all of it. And you know, if you go into a deep hypnotic state, you can actually access things that you don't even know that you were aware of at the time, because maybe consciously you were not aware of them, but you can remember things that were happening around you in extraordinary detail. So our brain is absorbing all this. You know, it's just entering in when we open our senses and we use this routine of the sit and of expanding our senses in combination. We're taking it all in, like nutrients, whether we're aware of it or not. And I sometimes think of our many senses as a form of nutrition for our soul, if you will. You know, it's like spiritual nutrition. And, you know, I spend a considerable amount of time in the daylight hours outside. I deliberately put a little table out here, a chair for my laptop, and you know, I do most of my work now from this area right here. And you know, I have lizards running by my feet, you know, and I have birds flying and landing on the table where I'm sitting. And you know, and it's like this is how I'm integrating the sit spot even more so into my everyday life, even though I'm really busy. I feel like I live in my sit spot, and I guess I kind of do. It's just such a cherished routine. This routine allows me to share stories with Sarah and with Aidan and with Nate and, you know, with other people that I talk to on the phone live while they're happening, or you know, something cool just happened. Like just a few days ago, the bluebirds' babies fledged from their little nesting box, and it was a feeling of celebration, right? And Sarah's been watching them every day, and I've been watching them every day, and we've gotten to know the mom and the dad. You know, and there's just like this feeling. You know, it's just like, oh yay! You know, they fledged. Ah, you know, and when we see the parents with the babies come back to this area, you know, to visit, you know, it feels like they're visiting us, you know. So there's like all this richness that comes from these relationships, and Yeah, and having friends to share stories from our sit spots with is really a really big part of it. I think we need both. And I hope it, you know, that this can help you, inspire you, give you encouragement to, you know, if you were like me at 10 years old, you know, I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous, right? but, you know, what the reward will come from being there for, you know, maybe a few weeks every day. As Sarah said, you know, don't worry about 20 minutes. Don't worry about, you know, how much time. Just go when you feel like going. But there is one thing I want to leave you with, and that is, you know, finding that sit spot. And I know so many people have looked for their sit spot for months and never found it, because there's this part of our brain that has this ideal sit spot in mind that may not actually exist. And I don't know why that happens for some people, but they just won't find that place, you know? So I like to encourage people to wander around near their home, because if the sit spot's too far away, you'll just never go, you know? And if it can be in your backyard, that's the ideal, right? That's perfect, because you'll go there a lot. You might go there multiple times every day. You might do Zoom calls there. You might, you know, sit there to work on your laptop, right? You could take your morning drink there. You know, you can do your evening sundown ritual there. You can, you know, if it's right there, you're going to use it all the time. And so there's nothing to be ashamed of a backyard or back stoop sit spot, right? Edge of the patio. But if you're wandering landscape looking for a sit spot, you know, the way we always encourage people is to just kind of do a sort of a reconnaissance wander. You know, go out every day, just kind of wander away in different directions from your house. You know, just kind of feel your way around. You know, look at the place where you live from like a Google map, you know, especially with the landscape, the terrain map turned on, the satellite image. So you get a sense of where are the open spaces, you know. You might discover that there's a little park that you don't even know is in your neighborhood. But anyway, so you just kind of wander around, give yourself like a week or two just to explore. Because that in and of itself is just fun, you know, and don't be attached. And maybe as part of your wander, you just sit somewhere along the way and just chill for a minute. Sometimes you'll discover your sit spot doing it that way. But then after you've kind of gone 360 degrees around your home looking for different, you know, possibilities, then one day come out in the morning with a real strong intention to find your sit area, and then just kind of close your eyes and feel with your body where you feel pulled, and then just kind of stop every once in a while along the way and double check, do I feel pulled, right? And sometimes that will lead you to a cool place, right? And that sit spot I had as a boy for those seven and a half years, 71 to 78. It was, you know, if I walked comfortably and slowly, it was 3.5 minutes from my front door. And I could get there faster if I jogged. I can get there in a minute, probably, maybe a little more than a minute. You know, it was so close that it was like, there was no resistance to the distance. You know, so I think that's an important thing to consider for yourself. You know, like what is comfortable for you that you would find yourself going there regularly enough. And again, one more time, if you just want to put a chair outside your back door and that's your sit spot, do it. I'm telling you, it's better to go there multiple times a day because it's close than to only go once or twice a month because it's far. You're going to get so much more from multiple times a day than you would, obviously, from a really cool one, but you have to drive a half hour to get to it. You know, so there's a balance to be struck there, but main thing is, you know, you don't know what you're missing until you've gone through that kind of one cycle of 28 days or whatever it is that takes our brain to go from this is a chore to wait. I actually really like this. Like Aiden was describing with his children, you know, they reached this place where now they want to do it, right? And that just takes time and patience. But there's a real gift in there. And that gift just keeps on giving. You know, somebody said to me once, my colleague Matt Goff, he said, you know, you've been going to your sit spot, what, 54 years? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. He's like, well, when is it enough? And of course, he was asking that question, you know, as a kind of a joke, right? Because, well, wait, I did my sit spot for a year, so I kind of got that already. I can check that off. But there's no end to the gifts that come, you know, and after 54 years, I hope I can go another 54 years every day to my sit spot, because it's a gift that keeps giving. It's never the same. It's always changing. It's always revealing something. It's always teaching me something, always entertaining me, always causing me to be curious and showing me mysteries that I have to solve. You know, it's like a lifelong learner's dream gym. When you get all the routines tied together, it's such a fantastic, fantastic routine. And I'm just really grateful that Tom made me do that so long ago, until it became an intrinsically longed for experience where I wanted to go. And when my family traveled away for a couple of days to go visit my grandmother, how I missed my sit spot, you know? I'm like, oh, I'm missing my sit spot today, you know? And I'd have to go find like an extra sit spot near my grandmother's by the bay, you know. But I'm just so thankful that Tom did that for me when I was 10 and held that space for me and called me every night until it became something that I was intrinsically motivated to do. So, yeah, thanks to the ancestors that were wise enough to generate this routine and to support children in doing it. And, you know, all the gifts that it's given us. So, thank you.
And it's a practice that really is bringing us into our natural selves, right? It is that experience of return. It's an experience of deep relaxation. And over time, when we can learn to be in our sit spot and relax and absorb the way that John was describing, absorbing the nurturance of Mother Earth, of the trees around us and the bird song. And it really does, you know, give back exponentially what we invest in it. You know, if you think of 5 minutes a day to invest in this practice and doing that over time, so it's a little over a half an hour a week, just to give it a try. And start to see what pulls you back there. I think even within a week, there starts to build a curiosity of, what was that bird? What was that bird that was singing over there? Or what was that plant that was growing? Or, so yeah, just that like gentle discipline with ourselves. I don't even like to use the word discipline, but committing to a short period of time, 5 minutes a day for a week, and seeing how it goes. And seeing what it might develop into. And, you know, if you get to that place where you're there 20 minutes, I bet you have a really good story to come back with. And just what it does to my own nervous system and to my own sense of well-being, like John and Aiden both were describing, is such a valuable thing that we can bring into our lives, into our families, into our relationships, and, of course, for ourselves.
Well, to all the tens of thousands of people out there who have developed the sit spot or sit area routine in their lives, thanks for doing it, and thanks for sharing your stories with us in the ways that you have over the years. I just kind of find it cool to imagine all of us here and all the listeners and all the people who have sit spots all going and doing a sit spot every day and just feeling each of us out there on this land, this big in-breath, out-breath with nature that we could come back and share with each other. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.